Welcome to Toati Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Liat Meyerfeld, and today we are learning Melachim Aleph, Chapter 7. Looking at a plate of food, we are each faced with a dilemma. Do you first eat the food you love the most, and then the rest of it? Or do you savor it slowly and munch on the other things meanwhile? And a similar dilemma when we have a to-do list. Do you first quickly get the annoying chores done first, or do you rush to do what you love? We are told that building the house of Hashem took King Shlomo 7 years, and building his own house took 13. The debate is on. Did King Shlomo build the temple first and fast because it was most beloved to him, and he rushed to make sure it was completed as soon as possible? If this is so, his own house took long to build because he wasn't focused on it. Or did King Shlomo rush the temple over and done with, but spend time and energy on his personal house, focusing on all the details there for himself? Chapter 7 places this dilemma squarely before us. The first half of our chapter today starts with the 13 years that King Shlomo built a complex of royal buildings, houses filled with beautiful natural cedar wood and huge stones, decorated with precious gems. We are told of the great justice hall and his throne, the house he built for Pharaoh's daughter. This is the first part of the chapter. The second half of the chapter seems like it could have been part of yesterday's chapter 6. We go back to the details of the building of the house of Hashem, an elaborate description of the interior design, large vessels made of gold and bronze, some familiar like an altar and a table and lamps and tall pillars, all with intricate bronze work and decorations. And all the work that King Shlomo did in the house of Hashem was completed. It's impossible not to compare the technical specifications of the luxury building built by Shlomo in Yerushalayim to the specifications of the Mishkan in the desert. Not only the exact measurements, the precious materials, and the precision in the details, but also certain verses evoke associations. For example, the description of Hiram, the bronze artisan brought by King Shlomo to design the temple. And he filled him with wisdom and understanding and the knowledge to do all bronze work, which is very reminiscent of the description of Bezalel. And when I say reminiscent, I mean virtually identical. And the Spirit of Hashem filled him with wisdom and understanding and in knowledge and in all matters of workmanship. And they each built vessels of the temple and Mishkan, and each used intricate workmanship and artistry. And here, it's precisely from the many similarities that the fundamental differences emerge and stand out. The Mishkan in the desert was built by an explicit divine command, and Moshe also received the details of the building and the tools directly from Hashem. On the other hand, the magnificent buildings in Yerushalayim were built at the will of King Shlomo, designed by Hiram, and their purpose seems not just as worship of Hashem, but also to glorify his own name. Through the Mishkan, Hashem dwells amongst the people, while Shlomo mainly builds a house for Hashem's presence to be contained within it. The most significant difference is the location. The Mishkan is the center of the camp in the desert. All the people of Israel camp around it, and it's a kind of magnetic nucleus that attracts all the tribes to Hashem and maintains the unity of the people. Whereas the temple, for all its splendor, can be seen as an accessory to the king's palace. Shlomo's temple stands in the courtyard of his own palace and is possibly accessible only to those that can enter the palace, as it would be unthinkable that anyone who enters the temple could then go through to the palace, because that would be a real danger to the safety of the king and the monarchy. Indeed, the magnificent temple built by Shlomo is used only by the elite, a wealthy sliver of the people. There is something about such a temple that whispers loudly, "My strength and the might of my own hand made me this strength. Kochi ve'otzem yadi asa li et ha'chai lazeh." The ironic comparison to the Mishkan hints at a harsh criticism of the king and his conduct. The detailed descriptions in this chapter are so vivid. King Shlomo wanted everyone who arrived to be fully encompassed in the moment, for each individual to create a personal experience based on their own perspective in processing this world. Architects will take out measuring tapes and measurements. Mathematicians will note that in describing a round basin, pi is rounded down here to 3 in the descriptive calculations. They will try to understand how this huge edifice was technically built. Artists see the details, colors, images, pictures, patterns, decorations on all the walls. They will soak in the intricate artistry. Some people will have a spiritual experience. They see the symbolism and experience of building a dwelling place for Hashem, a mikdash, a holy place connecting this world with upper worlds, connections of human and godly. As it was then, so too, we can use many different personal languages to read these two chapters. Try to live this experience, because what Hiram creates, there's nothing like it anywhere or anywhere ever again. For example, On each of the two sides of the entrance are two glorious bronze pillars. They are so fabulous that they are named. As all names, these have deep meanings. The first pillar is named Yachin, from the root Muchan, prepared, that Hashem has prepared a magnificent world to appreciate. The second pillar is named Boaz, from the root strength, that Hashem has the strength to change nature when it's needed. 24 feet tall, 15 foot circumference, both Yachin and Boaz are topped with a 7-foot bronze crown, with bronze designs of woven lulav and palm tree branches, surrounded by swirls all around, spiraling up, 400 pomegranates and flowers. The description is like a greenhouse celebration. And the Yam, literally the ocean, is a humongous basin. It's a beautiful bronze structure at the entrance to the main hall, round, 8 feet high, 15 foot diameter, 45 foot circumference. This large decorated water tank stands on 12 figures of cattle made of copper that were mobile pedestals on which the basin was placed, 3 on each side, decorated figures of lions, cattle, and kruvim. And the water basin itself, decorated with flowers, pomegranates, bells, fabulous, like a garden of Eden. It's humongous and stunning. Altogether, it's an overwhelming experience. The temple has a water in a basin, not for Kohanim's purity, just to give a feeling of the embrace of water, eternity, life, lusciousness, like the flowing rivers of Eden. Everything is bronze, shiny, flowers, but not real flowers, not real fruit. All shiny, main elements are gold and everything inside is bronze. Shlomo invites everyone into an experience, a shiny gold, bronze, stone, wood experience. He is saying, this is the Garden of Eden. Just as Hashem is here on earth, just as Adam and Chava experienced the spirit of Hashem walking through the garden, so too everyone should feel like it's an Eden filled with the spiritual presence. A bronze Eden, a golden Eden, an Eden that is cast from natural materials. King Shlomo wants everyone to have this Garden of Eden feeling. Yechezkel the prophet describes this sense of Eden, a river flowing from Yerushalayim to Yam HaMelech, the Dead Sea. Yechezkel also takes us on a journey, and we see water flowing from Yerushalayim and watering the country, not from gold or bronze, but a real river, a natural spring that flows all through the land, even bringing life to Yam HaMelech. Can you sense Hashem similarly in the temple? Can these materials be filled with spirituality? If yes, then Shlomo has created heaven on earth. If the people can bring it to life, then it will be like the Garden of Eden. But meanwhile, it is stone, wood, gold, and bronze. The last verse starts by telling us the workmanship is completely finished. Batishlam kol ha-melecha asher asah ha-melech Shlomo bet Hashem. All the work that King Shlomo had done in the house of Hashem was completed. The word shalem is a word of completion. It isn't even used in creation. This mikdash is now meant to be the completion of the world. Now there is shlemut, wholeness. Notice also the city will be named Yerushalayim, city of shalem, a place of peace, harmony, and completion. The second part of the verse, Vayaveh Shlomo et kodshei David ha-melech, et ha-kesef ve-et ha-zahav ve-et ha-kelim natan be-otzrot bet Hashem. Shlomo brought in the sacred donations of his father David, the silver, the gold, and the vessels, and deposited them in the treasury of the house of Hashem. Shlomo brought the Kodesh of his father David and put it in the treasury. Why didn't Shlomo use all the gold and wealth of David? In praise, Shlomo didn't use the wealth brought by David in battle. It was spoils of battles. The Midrash tells us that David knew the temple would inevitably be destroyed. If it would be built with spoils of war, the nations would say the destruction came because the wealth was unearned. So King David asked for the spoils of war not to be used in building the temple. But we can also see this as critical. King David has so much wealth that he wanted to be used to build the temple. When there were years of poverty and famine, people came to him and begged for it to be used for food. And King David resisted, saying it was designated for the temple. Hashem said to him, David, my children are dying of hunger, and you have storehouses filled with gold to build an edifice? I swear, says Hashem, that this gold will not be used by Shlomo. The Kedusha is in the people. I want to finish by connecting all this together with the words of Rav Yonasan Eibeshes, who lived in 1700s Poland. In his book, he explains another midrash. King David had a nighttime ritual. His harp would play and he would learn. In the morning, his ministers would come in and say, our master, the king, your nation requires sustenance. He said, go and sustain one another, provide each other with whatever is lacking. The sages of Israel responded to him with a parable. A single handful of food does not satisfy a lion, and a pit will not merely be filled from the rain that falls directly into its mouth, but other water must be piped in too. So too the nation cannot sustain itself using its own resources. King David told them, "Go and take up arms with the troops in battle in order to expand our borders, bring home spoils, and provide our people with a livelihood." Why did the sages come to David? At first they ask for sustenance. Don't they know people can sustain themselves from each other, or not? King David then tells them, if it's not possible, so go to battle and get spoils and have what to eat. And that's what the people did. Do you remember Hashem told King David, "You can't build my temple because your hands are full of blood"? Which blood spill does this refer to? In King David's wars, he had to kill because our enemies came up against us. But here, he sends them to battle even though he has storehouses. He wants to save his wealth to build the temple. Hashem says to him, "These battles? For food? These bloods are in your hands. The money you saved to build the temple is exactly the reason you won't be allowed to build the temple. It is blood money. Money saved by spilling blood, blood that you chose to spill." Because of this, King Shlomo doesn't use the money from his father, but rather puts it in the treasury. But has the message of prioritizing the people and their relationship with Hashem trickled down to Shlomo? Has building the temple full of sparkle as his father wanted to do overwhelmed him? Thank you for studying together. Lilui Neshamot Imotenu Yekarot, Esther Oppenheimer Alea Shalom and Sarah Schenker Alea Shalom, each deeply devoted and proud to transmit their family's Torah legacy to the next generations.